You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show this week in WordPress and Bootstrap SaaS. It's episode 952. We've got a great guest on the show. We've got Robert Wingash, Chief Information Officer at SID, which says they are Europe's biggest WordPress agency. So I presume that's totally correct. In this episode, we're going to be talking about multi-site. What is it? Where is it at the beginning of 2025? And then we're going to be talking also maybe during the show, a concept around multi-site. And everything to do with Robert's journey in the world of WordPress and being part of a large WordPress agency. And what's that like at the beginning of 2025? It should be a great show. So, Robert, can you just give us a quick 20-second intro of yourself, and then when we go into the main part of the show, we'll delve more into your background then.
Yeah, I'm an agency owner since 2005-06. We started our agency, and I'm a developer background, and we're doing large agency like clients, biggest names on the planet, but NDA wise. Yeah, that's all I can say about that. But it was like very big projects, and we are doing WordPress since the dawn of time.
All right. Where did you get the hat from?
That's the CMS Garden, as you can see here. It's a non-profit organization for the other open source CMS. And that started like 2012, 2013. And if you keep at something like for a decade, people will recognize you for that.
Yeah.
Just as a hint.
I don't need that. I've just got a very instinctive face. I am ugly. So there, Kirk, would you like to introduce yourself to our new listeners and viewers, Kirk?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency myself called Mañana No Más, and we focus largely on membership and learning websites, working with tools like Lifter LMS and with the great folks at WP Tonic.
That's fantastic. Before we go into the main part of this great interview, we've got a message from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. Before we go into the main part of the interview, I also want to point out we've got a great resource for the power user and for the freelancer. We've got a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services. It will save you a ton of time. They've all been used by WP Tonic, or they're supplied by WP Tonic to our clients. Plus, we've got some great special deals from the sponsors of the show. You can get all these goodies by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved tribe? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. So, Robert, can you give us the intro, how you got into the semi-crazy world of web development and WordPress? What led you to this spot in your career, Robert?
So I started as a developer for a different CMS.
What?
And
oh, I will forgive you, Robert, but
and it's a very European one, so nobody outside of Europe is really knowing that. And then I stumbled in the WordPress community, and as you know, the saying like "come for the code, stay for the people." That's exactly what happened with me. So I then was using WordPress for my private website, got into the German community, asked two very, 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 very stupid questions that were answered like thousands of times. And I asked them again as a person would definitely not do. And they helped me. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. They are nice here. I think I stay. And with my developer knowledge and the helping other people syndrome I have, I quickly ranked up into the moderator status in the German forum. And then with my developer skills, I could help them then also like get better things and better websites for the German community. And then the leadership of the German community then came together, was like, what if we do a company? And times warp to now, that's it.
So what was your development background before you got into the WordPress community then, Robert?
So I was a PHP developer. So it was simply doing PHP and back end stuff. And lucky me, not like CSS was not really that big at that time. And I had front end developers in our agency, like in the old job. I was like in a small.
And how did you get into the world of PHP, if you don't mind me asking?
That was like 1999. It's ages ago. Luckily, PHP 4 was still around, was already around. So I simply was learning PHP by myself. There was so much documentation out there. I learned HTML in 1997. Had my first website up and running in 1997, which I clearly shows my age right now. And then simply PHP and JavaScript was something that you then curved into and evolved into. And doing that for a few years to then be in the agency, doing some CMS work, and then stumbling privately into the job that makes more fun. And then from that, growing to be one of the biggest European agency in that regard. So it's still very privileged and very weird that I ended up to a job where I'm paid to fly to Manila to be at a WordCamp and speak there, which is it's still insane.
Right. Over to you, Kurt.
Nice. Well, it's kind of serendipitous that we have you on the call today. Just this week, I've had multiple people ask me about using different tools in a multi-site environment. And I'm always amazed at how people really don't seem to understand even what it is or what they're asking for as a business owner. So if you could you give our audience just kind of a quick outline of what a multi-site is? And how it fits into WordPress, you know, especially now?
Yes. So the easiest explanation is that multi-site is having multiple instances on one installation. That is it's the easiest giveaway for that. There are good ways of using that. For example, if the plugins and the themes that you're using, if they are kind of the same, if you are reusing those things. So the easiest explanation I always give is global brand management. Imagine if you have if you're a company that wants to have multiple websites of the kind of the same content wise with you, and you want to stay with the same plugins, with the same theme, you want to have different angles, and you want to give different people access to different sites. So what you should not do with multi-site is going I can be a web hosting company and I can run WordPress on my own, can have customers use this. And I'm definitely be the one that cracks WordPress.com as a way of earning money. I'm definitely will outperform them. That is good luck. Get a time machine, get 2005 or 2004 and try your idea there. And good luck with that. And otherwise, if you have for example, universities are using multi-site. So if you have different departments being their own owner of content and plugins that they can activate from the realms of existing plugins in the multi-site environment, then that's also a good use. So I always work from the examples of like the no-brainers of like multi-site use to explain people what multi-site is.
But you can, it was pushed. I just want to see, I've got another business apart from WP Tonic that's built on multi-site. And it's based on a SaaS model. And we provide marketing tools and email and text using API with a provider, SendGrid. And it's aimed at a specific industry. So that was pushed for a while as well, wasn't it? Using multi-site as a kind of, I forgot what the WordPress term for it was, but they were using a specific
WordPress as a service.
Yes.
But that's still a use case. That's still,
yeah, that in your opinion, is that a legitimate use case?
Yeah, because you can install a WordPress and configure it right now very fast if you have zip files ready, and you can, like, hosting companies can do this now from a different angle. But if your sites are like marketing sites with a clear cutout of content, with a clear cutout of like themes and plugins, multi-site, if you are ready to like work with that, it's faster. It's simply faster if you stay on the same server, if you want to run this up. Otherwise, because then you afterwards, if you have like thousands of installations, basically, that are single installations that all need to be updated, that all need to be maintained, that all need to be checked. So if you have one multi-site installation and you, for example, update your SEO plugin, you have it updated everywhere at the same time. If you have a running business and you simply jump up every time a new installation of WordPress, that's a thing later you need to maintain. So that's why multi-site, if it's just like a small website, like a landing page, for example, or a website with bigger stuff, but people care about that, then multi-site can give you this overview, this managing benefit that you have, which you have like plenty of installations, single installations you don't have.
Right. Well, we provide all the tools and a dashboard, and we provide a simple website as part of the package. But if they want a more customized website, we do it as a separate hosted solution, and we just link the dashboard to the back end of their website if they want to edit their website. So that's how we deal with what you've outlined, because if they want to, it doesn't deal, it's not meant to have different websites that are highly customized, and it's not suited for that. Another quick follow through question, and then I'm going to let Kurt do the main question. In the world of Gutenberg and Gutenberg blocks and that, what you outlined, because of the reality of Gutenberg, has that reality of having like one website, one theme with maybe some minor changes, maybe a selection of quasar child themes based on a theme in multi-site, in the world of Gutenberg and full site editing, has that paradigm, has that fundamentally changed at all?
No, but it, like, multi-site always gave you the benefit if you have interlocked things. For example, just imagine you have a branding website and then you have like 100 sub-brands of the same brands, but they are locally different and all over the world. With a multi-site, you could have one content repository where you then change the content over like the same content over all sites. Like, for example, if you do like a UI change, if you have like 100 different installations, good luck rolling this out without problems to all of the 100 sites. If you have branding wise 100 sites in a multi-site, you can have this, the theme, or you can have like, let's say, global blocks, and you simply can have content that is simply connected with each other all for your multi-site.
Well, that's what we've done. We've built a set of starter themes using Cadence WP and implementing them into a multi-site environment. And it seems to be working quite well. and it, they can, so they have a selection of child starter themes, and they also have a selection of landing pages based on those child themes, based on cadence. But that's what we've done. Over to you, Kurt, for the next main question.
Yeah, I was just thinking of use cases, right? And so our next real question is, can you give us a real world example of how multi-site could or was a great solution? But I was just thinking of my own repertoire. Like, I remember I had a client that had a dating site, but they wanted a dating site that was a multi-site. So they wanted it to be like an overarching site that was like the dating site. And then they had like a site for different lifestyles that they went after. So all of the different lifestyle sites, they were similar, like to your point, similar themes, similar content, similar layouts, but each one was managed separately as its own entity. And I thought that that worked really, really well. But in your use case, especially the size of your agency, could you give us like a real world example of one that was really good?
Yeah, like I cannot give you a URL, but this is what are you describing? Like to have like a global brand and simply have different solutions for different countries. For example, the benefit that multi-site gives you is to also like have different like custom solutions for different sites. For example, the Japanese website or like a German, let's stay on privacy stuff. European have different laws, so you could have plugins installed on the European websites that are not installed in the US websites. So that's a benefit of like having the same but then different solutions for different sites. So and that's in the global brand management world, that is the easiest thing, where for example we compete with Sitecore and Adobe Experience Manager, where we simply offer like the same solutions that those big brands need. And that they have, like from like global, like sporting brands, merchandise brands, like all of those things, they have like a global view of the world, and then they have local differences and local specifications that they need to match. And that's where a multi-site is an easy way for them, for example, to have an overview of what URLs are used. Because that's one of the biggest like security thing that they are having, is being able to know where exactly their branding, their CI, their CD is like shown, what URLs they are using, and not have, for example, like a branding agency in Brazil, for example, like starting a website that they need for like 2 months, and then they forget it afterwards because it's paid for a year and the campaign, but it's, the campaign is done after 2 months, and nobody of like the people who like ranked the site up is caring about the site 3 months later, but they're still pointing a URL of the global brand to this WordPress installation. So having that and on a central spot, on a central URL spot, and to have overview over that, and user access, onboarding, offboarding, all of those things, to have it on a central repository, that is simply helping those big brands.
Nice. As you were talking, I was thinking, you know, our work in the e-learning space, I could see how a lot of people want to have training that in different languages. So we end up having a lot of conversations about translation models for sites. But to your point, some of those language requirements might have different content needs based on the laws and stuff. So maybe the multi-site is a more apropos choice. It's interesting to think through. Jonathan?
Yeah, in the title of this interview, Robert, I kind of multi-type, I've redone the title multi-site, the ugly stepchild or the hidden unicorn of WordPress. And the reason I used that title, Robert, you know, I thought it was quite flippant, but I also thought it was quite aimed, because there was a time where multi-site seemed to be the flavor of the month in WordPress, and Automattic seemed to be pushing it. And it's not only multi-site, I've been involved in WordPress not quite as long as you, but almost. And I've seen this with Automattic and WordPress in general. There's been like other elements of WordPress that seem to be the flavor of the month, the flavor of the year, and then they're not. And it seemed to be hinted that multi-site wasn't going to be developed anymore. It wasn't really, it wasn't going to be killed. Or it seemed to be hinted that it was no longer really going to be pushed in that. So where do you see it at the beginning? Is it still updated? Is it still actively improved? Or where is it? Because I think a few people shied away from it because they didn't know if it was just going to be killed and died off, if you know what I mean, Robert. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the problem with multi-site is that, sounds weird, it's kind of like feature ready, feature done. So it's working. While we speak, like, for example, the last White House was a multi-site because poor translations. You have like big universities, really, really huge universities using multi-site to simply use this possibility of the department stuff. So it's simply being used, but there is not that much like improvement in the development of that. There's like currently something like 170 issues are in the multi-site, in the track for WordPress core for multi-site. And the topics are very niche, kind of like some of them like if you use like an old ticket that was solved like a few releases back was if you have multi-site installed on a port, it will create a problem if you create a site on that, because then the port number will crash something. Like, as you both going like, oh yeah, that's a problem I constantly run into. Not. So that's why it was not really that much of a hassle to have code updates for that. There was we had in the version 5 something, we had like domains. I think it was even the version four where we have domains as a standard now in. Like before that, you needed to have a special plugins to have domains overriding the domains in that. And that was solved like ages ago. And even like multi-site was merged in version 3.0 and it got updated along the way because we have, component maintainers who still care, and you have still people who care about the code. I think for the next release, we have like three track tickets that are up for merging for multi-site, but it's not that like shiny object because it's simply, something that simply works. And for the most people, when I, for example, I'm at WordCamps and I speak with people and ask them like, okay, what do you have that bugs you with multi-site? The first answer everybody gets like, yeah, nothing. And then you go like, okay, what is the code you have running that works around something in multi-site? And you like ask a follow-up question, then you go like, yeah, there is this small thing that bothers me, but I'm solved it already for like 2 years. In WordPress core. And the thing that I currently plan is to like simply get more of those like weird workarounds out of people. And if it's useful into core, but the thing is like there, you have some weird workarounds there that it's not really needed for the majority of multi-site users. It's more like for their special needs, for their special like workflows that they are having. And again, with now WordPress multi-site being in core since WordPress 3.0, which is like 2010-ish, 2011, if you now change something in multi-site that was behaving one way in the past and you change it now, you also kind of like break workflows that people are having because they simply build on a weird workflow or a weird bug that multi-site is having. So that's why it's such a long running, smooth running solution that is, doesn't get that much attention, but like many people are using it very quietly.
Well, a lot of people would like that same case that you've outlined for the main WordPress. Do you think what I outlined to you was in some way linked to you use this term, using WordPress as a service, a WASP, this whole using WordPress as SaaS that was pushed very heavily by certain people in the WordPress community, and it still is there, but it didn't, it lost traction. Do you think that's part of what I outlined, which you have answered, that it gets the impression that it's a kind of semi-dead corner of WordPress, but the reality is it works so well that there isn't much that needs to be done to it.
So just to jump in there for a second. So what we need for multi-site, what the thing that is really like dear to our heart as an agency is when the new relaunch of the backend interface comes. That is the point where, oh my God, yes, we need help for multi-site because the interface is complicated. Like it can be very complicated for people who easily stumble into this and they are overwhelmed with the sheer features of the possibilities there, because that's the thing that I have for conversations with people at events, that they are, that they, for them, multi-site can be too big and it's simply, because they still, for example, multilingual. Just take multilingual as an example. And we're using multilingual with our plugin as a multi-site solution. And we need to help people unlearn multilingual like workarounds that they're having with other plugins by simply using like core multi-site feature. And we need to help them like unlearning and stepping back and rethinking how core would do things. So that's why for us, the having an easier interface for like the whole multi-site management, having like a streamlined interface once we are like touching the new backend redesign and like having easier data exposure to them, helping them easier navigate all these things. That is something that once we are getting there with WordPress to have the new interface and to talk about the new backend interface and new data structures, that we really can improve the usability of multi-site.
I think one of its strengths is that you do have a super admin, which is one of the things that I really find frustrating with non-multi-site, is you do have this super admin ability of a multi-site, that you have, you can have admin, but then you can have one or whoever is classified as super admin. Do you agree with that? Because I always thought that was that editor roles, and it's always a painful part, especially when it comes to learning management systems that we're involved in, that, or a page building plugin. Editor role is never powerful enough to do a specific thing. So then you have to give the individual admin, and you want them to have a certain level of admin, but you don't want them really to be able to delete the webs or do really crazy things. Am I making sense, Robert?
Yes, but that's where the capability system of WordPress, and you can have like custom roles, you can have like the abilities there to give people custom roles. The problem is it's still you need to have an extra plugin, or you need to like write some code with that. And so that's why it's harder to do this. And there are so many like possibilities. Like just imagine like the phase 3 stuff with collaboration and workflows. Like this could revamp the way how editors are working in WordPress by simply working on the whole website, or working on like more things where they right now just need the, like it's easier for them to have admin rights, because we do not have a real workflow system inside of WordPress to revamp like things in like on this website, and then like simply be like, okay, that's now my pitch, and then someone with a higher level of like rights can go through that and go like, yes, that's possible. Because right now, if you like change something, you need to unpublish your website, because then you like, it's really the capability system needs an overhaul. for like having more sophisticated workflows. And that's why currently phase three is exactly touching that and the backend interface. So I would just say to you, like, just wait. Yes, it's not a fast pace of like all the changing at the same time, because we are currently talking about like data and visibility in the backend and like new features of the backend interface. But I think with the workflows, we will getting there to have more real world solutions of changing of websites that feels more like 2025 than right now.
Yeah, it really is necessary. It's one of the major weaknesses of non-multi-site WordPress. It's very frustrating. I have to give a load of people admin. It's a nightmare, and it's such a security problem. Well, I think we've had a great chat with Robert so far. Robert seems up for it. We're going to go for our middle break, folks. We'll be back in a few moments.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Conversio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Conversio at conversio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back. We've had a feast of multi-site. Robert seems to get my humor. He's not crying. But before we go into the second part of the show, I just want to point out, if you're a freelancer, if you're a power user, and you're looking to build a complicated WordPress website, and you don't want any arguments with your clients about utilizing that expensive WordPress plugin, and you being forced to use just a free plugin, which isn't good enough, wouldn't it be great to have a WordPress hosting partner that can provide all the best WordPress technology to you in one plan level? That's what you get at WP Tonic. We specialize in membership and community large websites, but any large project, we're probably a great partner, and we can provide all this technology so you can avoid those ugly conversations with your clients. If that sounds interesting, go over to wp-tonic.com/partners. wp-tonic.com/partners. And let's build something special together. Back over to you, Kurt.
I'm just going to be honest. I was listening to you guys talk, and I felt a little bit lost on some of the phrases. So I just wanted to...
Am I impressing you, Kirk, with my technical knowledge?
Yeah, I just want to put it out there. I'm thinking...
I'm not impressing Robert, I can assure you, Kirk.
But I'm thinking about our listeners, right? And listeners and followers. And so we have the, you know, what do you think some things that you could share with our audience about multi-site that developers don't understand or generally know? And I feel like you guys were kind of bantering on that already, but if I were to switch the mode of that question and say, hey, Robert, to developers or freelancers or startup agencies that are looking to get involved in multi-site, what direction or pathway might you point them towards? Maybe that gives people an idea of how to get started so they would understand the conversation that you guys were just having.
Yeah, so I would recommend like simply like putting it up for a spin. And now comes a very weird angle with that. If you are currently listening to that and you're not using WP CLI on managing websites, welcome to the big world. Please look into WP CLI. I know it's a totally different angle that Kurt that you are looking for, but
can you explain to normal people, Robert, what that is?
Yes. Sorry, developer background. I'm very sorry for that.
Mere mortals, Robert. Can you explain to mere mortals what that is?
So WP CLI is a CLI tool, which is a command line tool for WordPress. That you, if you have shell access to your server, I know that sounds big words, and just take them in, just breathe them in, and just like feel that the next time you click very often in your backend, doing kind of the same task, the same like to change like 20 users in your WordPress backend and to give them a different role, like. Yeah. The enterprise people in WordPress are not doing that. They're not clicking around in a WordPress backend. They're simply writing like a line of code, like a line of like commands in the command line. And the beauty with using that on a Linux server, for example, that most hosting companies have, is you can connect commands with each other. You can say like, give me all users that have like the role outer. And now, as Jonathan said that, give all of them admin. Again, bad idea. Very bad idea to do this. But if you need...
Well, maybe a hacker would like to do that.
But if you need to ramp up the level, the admin level of that, yes, you can click in the back end. And now think about multi-site. You need to do this throughout many sites. Throughout like the to 3 or 4 sites, to 10 sites, to 20 sites, to change users like access rights, you can simply write a command for that to connect all these like commands to with each other, and then you can run this on WordPress, and simply all of those people are changed in all of those sites. So it really is something that can help you work faster. And for the multi-site perspective, as I said, like simply give it a try. Whatever problem you run into, lucky you, you're doing this in 2025. So it's over like 15 years of multi-site is in WordPress. It's very, very weird if you find a problem that someone did not solve a decade ago or like 5 years ago. Like whatever problem you run into in multi-site, like just ask at LLM, just ask ChatGPT questions. It's so much content out there that you might, if you feel weird with the answer, just check if the answer is outdated, because again, like the LLMs and all of that stuff, like they have like, they can like maybe know not the current version of WordPress or the current version of multi-site in WordPress. So I just give you like, just try it and feel very... empowered by it simply being used while we are speaking right now. It's serving universities. It's serving global brands. So if you start with that and you bump into something, someone probably has already solved it.
Are there some really great community Slack groups, other groups out there that you would recommend to freelancers or people that we've triggered their interest in multi-site, but they want to join some online communities? Are there any resources like that you could recommend, Robert?
It's hard because, again, like it's done by it's not really a public thing where we have like a central place and go like everybody multi-site go there. It's the normal ways of doing that. If you there's one community that it's not your typical community, and it's not really that everybody could swan into this, but there is WP Campus, which is the community for higher education, which some of them are using multi-site, as I said. I'm not saying everybody go there because like it's not, they are not built for like, hey, I have a random question about multi-site. So like you can ping me, you can ping like people as a normal WordPress forums, they can help you. You are surprised how many people know multi-site, and there's like not that much. As I said, like we have this now for over 15 years, there's not that much like people going like, hey, I have this problem. There still will be those people, and answers are already there. And if you ask a question there, you will be surprised how many people know multi-site and can help you.
Yeah. Go on, Kurt.
I just wanted to say, as kind of a follow-up to how to get started, I've run into this in my own experiments with multi-site. And so and it's not one of the questions, so I'm blindsiding you here. But how important is the hosting that you're using to a multi-site example? And I'm throwing it out there, like, I was on one and it said it was multi-site capable. I wanted to launch this really cool project. This was years ago. And then it just horribly failed. But it could not sustain what we were trying to do. And then I moved over to a more premium host and voila, magic, you know, everything started to work. And so as people listen to this and they get intrigued or they think, hey, maybe multi-site is a pathway for me, how important is it for them to consider a better hosting platform?
Yeah, sorry, that's the blind spot I'm having as an enterprise agency. Like, we're premium hosts, is our normal language. So totally, thank you for this question.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that being a core feature, and there's even like some plugins that were coded by having PIX run over a keyboard, they also have problems with multisite. Just to touch like this, like if you have a cheap plugin that was like $5 on wherever, it could have problems with multisite. But most plugins that are written good enough, enterprise agency perspective, good enough that can run on multi-site. And the hosting part is that they're still, because of the niche function of multi-site and the people who use it, as Kurt, you were prime example of that, were like running into issue going like, meh, maybe the wrong hosting company. Some website as a service or WordPress as a service hosting companies, they can be surprised by multi-site. That means that they are just around for a few years now, because normally, like, after a while, they all got one or two or 20 requests for multi-site, and then they look into this feature and they like simply get out of their own way of limiting WordPress. And once they do this, it works. So normally it's simply they're overthinking it. They want to control this. There are some people, as I said in the beginning, like that I do hosting. And then like hosting companies go like, yeah, but please, I want to charge you for all sites you have on your server. So they then limit multi-site and then they charge you extra multi-site and then they want to make sure that you don't wiggle your way around multi-site. So that really a premium hosting company or a hosting company who gives you a good vanilla hosting experience, these two can be the ones that don't stand in your way with multi-site.
Yeah, I want to chirp in there actually, Kurt, because I think it's very similar, Kirk, to if you're using a learning management system, especially if you're using BuddyBoss. I think you can get away with spinning it up and trying it. But as soon as you get a user base and people are really using the back end, and if you're using substandard hosting, then it's like Robert said, it's totally reliant also on the plugin mix and if somebody knows how to set it up. But even with those quantifiers, if you're not on really good hosting, it seems okay until you get those first users, and then it just falls to bits, Kurt. It just descends into a hot mess, and people blame multi-site. But it's a very similar situation to BuddyBoss or a mixture when you're using it for marketing, email, text messaging, and you got tens of thousands of emails going out, whatever. It's that scenario. Back over to you, Kirk. Sorry, I interrupted there.
No, it's okay. And then, again, I know I kind of took us off path a little bit in the questions, but I
would never do that, would I, Kirk?
No. I believe that we're coming up to, the easy one for us, Robert, is what AI tools are you personally using, like, in your day-to-day? We ask this with almost everybody because there's, like, this ubiquitous adoption of AI. What do you find yourself leaning on the most?
Yeah, my day job is mostly like dealing with people. So AI is cannot like help me with that fully, of like communicating with people and like reading compliance stuff. And so you cannot simply throw like a 200 questionnaire at an AI with like, yeah, sure, here's my data and please have fun with that. So it's really something that is not a like the day-to-day stuff that I really need to work with. But I like have local running AI stuff, like the AIs of like the possibilities, and have like a good machine that like simply can run an AI. So I have like Llama and like other things running locally. Sorry, European here, and so, yeah, compliance is a thing with us. And otherwise, like I peeked into Claude, peeked into ChatGPT and like the others to simply play with that and to have a like a view of like what is coming and keeping up to date with that.
I've got a quick follow through question. There seems to be when it comes to actual development and AI and WordPress, you know, the point of views where we might be in 18 months or 2 years' time. The gulf between different people's views in the WordPress community seem to be enormous. You seem to have a group of people that suggest that it maybe not be the best time to spend an enormous amount of time trying to become a WordPress developer if you're in your early stages, because you'd be able to put verbal commands and it will just make whatever you want and that seems to be pushed very strongly. And then there's others that say AI, you know, it's nonsense, you shouldn't be doing it, you know, you shouldn't be using AI as a coding tool, or you can, but it's got really limited. What's your own views about this, or have you got any views about this?
So about AI, so vibe coding, for example, like just take the person that have no skills in software writing can like create code and can create things. There's still a need for architecture. There's still like if you go over the first hump of like a prototype, there's still a use for someone who knows, who understands like an architecture that like survives like future iterations of what you currently try to do. So there's still a use for developers, because people can really hard describe what this will be leading to. So AI will help them get like afloat, get like started. But in terms of like architecture of like long standing things that even they can evolve and not break over the long term, like data migration and like all of those things, this can be factored in by a senior developer that like AI currently is not. And so those kind of like leverages of enabling those people. And on the content side, whatever, like WordPress will not go away, because people still need a way to express themselves. I know like we all talk about like business websites and all of that, but we still have a huge number of WordPress installations that are normal end users that want to like publish their ideas and to have this on their own website and not on like some social media platform that will simply can disable them in a whim idea, like going like, no, we don't. Everybody with a starting their first name with a C is now banned. So they can simply do this. And being on the open web, that is something where WordPress still has a saying and still is the most used CMS. And from a development perspective, just to like round this up, from a business perspective, having someone writing you 100% custom code from a big enterprise perspective, that is a danger. Because if this person goes away, or if this person will leave you, then you have a problem that congratulations, you have 100% custom code. So when you go to the next person and going like, yes, I have all this code, I have all this installation, can you change something? They will go like, yes, we can rewrite that, what you're currently having. And this will cost you the same amount of number of like money you already spent to get this to a reusable and like standard based system. I'm not saying that the frameworks are not good with that. I'm just saying from an enterprise perspective, custom code is best served if they build on a very generic and code base where people can coming in and going out, and you then have your ownership over your data and not being fully vendor locked in into someone.
I think you put that so well, and I'm not going to name names or where, but there's people kind of spewing out, and I had conversations with Kirk about this, and I despise them, Robert, that I'm not going to go into because that might be identified, but I think what you've outlined is such common sense, but sometimes common sense is lacking, isn't it, Robert, to say the least. So I'm going to do the last question, and maybe you can stay on. Do you think you can stay on for another 10 minutes for some bonus? But Kurt's got to leave really quick and give him a break. But my last question is, if you had your own time machine and you could go back to the beginning of your career, is there one tip, one insight you'd like to share with yourself? Apart from not coming on this show.
So I think the focus more on people. Because in my beginning, I was focusing on code. And I always have this explanation of like, I developed code in the past and now I develop people because they scale better. So it's from a term of like, that's a thing I needed to understand to accept inefficiency, which is the human experience. And I was like, in my young age, I was like, yes, I know this better. I can do this. And I came to realize to simply give people leeway, give people enough room to breathe and to come to the conclusion that, I might already saw, but it's like really making sure that they can be the best of themselves. And how can I enable them to become that? And one of the solutions is to get out of their way.
That's fantastic. So we're going to wrap up the podcast part of the show. We're going to have some bonus content. I'm going to be asking Robert what in the beginning of 2025, how strong is WordPress in Europe? I'm going to ask him about his journey with his agency. What were some of the key points that led to growth and some of the struggles that the agency had to grow to the size that it's had? Should be a great bonus and bonus content. So, Robert, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and your agency and what you're up to?
Yeah, so our agency is called Site, and we are site.com. So we renamed last year. So that's why if you find a different word and different sounded agency and it sounds weird, that's our old name. We spend money to get a better name. And so if you write my name in some search engine and you see a picture like that, then you find the right person. So I'm kind of like everywhere on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on whatever, on the open web. I'm everywhere and I'm looking always like kind of like that. So
I just love it. You said Twitter and I say Twitter.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to use
it. Is there a name?
I refuse to use that term. I'm never going to use it again. Over to you, Kirk. Kirk, what's the best way for people to find you?
For business, anything, Manana Nomas leads to me. ManananoMas.com or Manana Nomas on X. But if you want to reach out just to make a connection, the best way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm the only Kurt Von Onen on LinkedIn. So when you find me, you know you've got the right one.
Yeah. And like I say, we're going to do some bonus content. You can listen and watch and see all the hats that have been worn during this episode by going over to the WP Tonic YouTube channel. Like I say, we're going to be having some bonus content, which so you'll be able to view and listen the whole interview on YouTube. We're going to be back next week with another great guest. I've managed to wrestle up, like Robert, some fantastic WordPress and SaaS business guests for March. I'm sure you're going to find some great knowledge by listening to these great interviews. We will be back next week. See you soon. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.